Hello and welcome to Power of the Parent, the podcast. This series is a new format and we are going to be focusing on a different topic each week, bringing you three things you need to know about, whatever that may be, mainly from an employer perspective. But of course, there's plenty of reframing that parents could do to benefit from the content as well. We will be covering everything from parental leave transitions, managing boundaries, what to do when your talent pipeline looks a bit dodgy, tips on gathering feedback, and things like establishing parental support networks. So, let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. Today I have got a returning guest with me. So good, she needed to come back twice. So today I'm joined by Michelle Jimmer, who is the founder of Equality Pays, and she is the ultimate expert when it comes to all things pay gap. Just as a reminder, if you do want to listen to the first episode that Michelle featured on a couple of years ago now, but all still amazing stuff, I will link that episode in the show notes. So please do go take a look at that. But for today, we are focusing on three very topical things. Three things you need to know about are going to be the changes to pay gap reporting. Secondly, bracing yourselves for pay conversations in the workplace. And number three is going to be about consistency in pay conversations to minimise the loss of talent and those kind of wild outcomes that we aren't necessarily aiming for. So thank you so much for joining me again today, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
You know that I lap up our conversations and your expertise and experience. And it's a topic obviously really close to my heart, but I know for lots of people listening, it can feel like such a minefield and a level of inevitability that we have to, I don't know, I think the thing that I love about your work is the fresh perspective that you bring with it and that kind of, you make it feel accessible, you don't make it feel scary, certainly for me anyway, but yeah, so I'm really looking forward to diving in again. The first point that you're going to be talking about are the changes to pay gap reporting. So everybody, get your pens and pencils at the ready. Talk us through what this means and what we need to know about it.
Yeah. Those of you that already report on gender pay gaps, you know how the drill works. It's every April. If you are a company that has 250 people or more, then you have to report on your pay gap. With this last Labour government that has come in, they presented in the Employment Rights Bill that they wanted to actually expand pay gap reporting to now include ethnicity and disability. And so whilst that's great, because we know that there's still work to be done in these areas, that's actually going to pose quite a few challenges for a lot of organisations. And the conversations that I'm having with organisations is all about all the ways in which that's going to be testing for them. And what is coming up is the realization that they've been put in a position where they're going to be mandated to report on ethnicity and disability, but the information that's given by employees is entirely voluntary. So employers are like, oh, how are we going to navigate that? And especially for those that have actually tried to collect this data on a voluntary basis and have had really low response rates, because then the question then becomes, what do we do with that? How do we use it and make it meaningful if only, say, 30% of people have responded? So that is going to be a challenge for organisations. And my perspective is part of the reason why response rates are so low is going to be because it reveals what the level of trust is like in the organisation and also how good the communication is. And if you sit and think about your own organisation and sit and think about perhaps problems that have occurred in the workplace, grievances that have been raised, disciplinaries that have occurred. And if you think about how ethnicity has played a role in them, or it's been an issue to do with disability, and you think about those outcomes, then it might be easy for you to track back and see why your response rates are the way that they are. So this legal requirement is actually bringing to the front cultural and trust issues that are taking place in the workplace. And so if you find yourself in that position, or you know that there are those type of examples, then you do have some work to do. And it's a lengthy work in terms of that it's not going to be a case of you can put together an initiative or ask a question today and then tomorrow you're going to get the results that you want. So that's the kind of cultural aspect that's going to be challenging for employers going forward. And then on top of that, you have the really practical aspect of how do we categorize people? Because when it was gender, the way that it's been done in a very binary way of male, female. And you also can go to HMRC for that information as well. So collecting the data has been easy in that sense, but it's going to be much more nuanced and challenging for ethnicity and disability because, and conversations and discussions are happening now around how do we categorize people and what systems are we going to use? Can people self-identify? Is there guidance? So all those conversations are being had at the moment because that's the practicality aspect as well that needs to be decided. And do organizations decide for themselves? Is it going to be mandated? So there's a lot that's still up in the air. So lots of challenges coming in that area. So if we just part to that for one moment and go back to gender pay gap reporting, there's new things coming on the horizon there as well. So what's new that's required is very specific data. I think it's like seven sets of data. Companies don't have to put together an action plan. They don't have to have a narrative. They don't have to put a report together and put it on their website. Those things are encouraged, but they don't happen. I actually read a stat the other day. I think it said 18% of companies that report on the gender pay gap provide a narrative. So very few provide a narrative. Most will just put the data up, put it on the government website, and then carry on business as usual. That is all going to change. And even within that, there is now going to be an expectation that you include very specifically your plans around how you're going to help people who are going through the menopause. You have to have some kind of menopause plan as well. So these changes that are coming in, we're likely to see them coming in for 2027. But the way that it works is that the report comes out, but the data that it's talking about is always from the year before. So it's going to be the first year, 2027. The snapshot date data is going to be from 2026, so from April 2026, which is literally just around the corner from the point of reporting. So there's a lot going on here for employers. And as always, my advice is to start planning sooner rather than later because you're here before you know it. And it is going to have an impact on organizations in terms of their ability to attract and retain people because even though we've had gender pay gap reporting for so many years, or 7, almost 8 years, money is still a topic that so many people find difficult to hold. So whether it's you as an employee with no managerial responsibilities, or you are a line manager or a director with managerial responsibilities, and quite often what happens is organizations are the last to know the issues and the problems that people have with the lack of pay transparency or with looking at that gender pay gap data and having concerns and questions. They're often the last to know, and it'll maybe come out at exit interview, or they won't talk about it at all. But CIPD did some research in 2023 and they found that 29% of women in the UK considered leaving their employer because of unfair pay systems or because of lack of pay transparency. So if CIPD could find that information, the reality is probably that so many more people have been in that situation. So here are a lot of challenges, but there's also a huge amount of opportunity to rectify some of those problems that you either are aware of and you know what the root causes are, you don't know what the root causes are, but here's an opportunity for organizations to start thinking about how can they address them because issues around pay transparency and pay gap reporting are not an abstract nice to have thing. It does have a direct correlation on your ability to attract people because people are reading these reports, but also it has a correlation with your ability to retain people. And to retain them at a level of productivity that you want them to be at as well.
Wow, that there's so much to be considering there, isn't there? And I think it's so easy as somebody who is not in this world, or even people that are in this world, in terms of the people within organizations that are charged with sorting this reporting out, it's very easy to see this as a report that is ticking boxes kind of mentality. And as long as that's done, that's okay. When I hear you talk about that, what you actually build is that picture of how much is wrapped in the culture of an organization that actually yes, we are looking for a number, we're looking for a stat to be reported, but it's never just a stat. There's so much that sits beneath that. It's a lot deeper, isn't it? And that kind of how revealing it's going to be of the state of trusting and communication in an organization. There's going to be a lot of organizations sitting here feeling a bit nervous, I think, about what is this actually going to do for them externally with PR, because it isn't just going to be about what their number looks like. It's also going to be the reading between the lines moments, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think in fairness, it's always been that. But I think a lot of organizations, and also the way that pay gap reporting has been sold to the public as well, has always been focused on that headline figure. So naturally, so many companies have been like, okay, our pay gap is X and we want to reduce it by Y by this date. And then it's just been, let's focus on that. But not everybody looks at those reports in that way. And it's actually supposed to have been a starting point for focusing on the real issues rather than it's just about the headline. Let's try and focus on that.
This happens in my line of work a lot of the time as well, that we chase a stat or a target or a quota or whatever you want to call it. We don't often address the narrative that sits behind it. And I found, certainly in the last year or so, where I've been talking a lot more about having a parental support strategy, I've seen people be really put off, quite frankly, about what emphasis that gives, because that feels like a bigger conversation than just saying, yeah, we support parents in the workplace, or yeah, we offer returner coaching, or yes, we know that some parents need time off for school plays, or things like that. Some of those things puts people's head above the parapet in a slightly different way to say, yeah, we've got a plan, we've got a report. And so that 18% is really quite, I thought it was going to be low, but blimey, that's less than a fifth. I think it feels to me to sit in a similar camp that there is a nervousness for employers about if I share a plan, that feels like I'm holding myself to a different, or we are holding ourselves to a different level of and a different standard than if we're just saying, yeah, we do the reporting, we do the right thing here. It's the so what, it's the stuff that comes after it that actually makes the difference.
Exactly. And that's why I think this has come in, because after 7 years of not mandating it, it's to push real action. Because, like you say, when you put together a plan, what you're saying is, I'm going to be accountable for it. It doesn't mean that you have to do everything that's in it, but what it does mean is that you have to show what you have done. And so, even if the plan had to go out the window and you had to do something else, that in itself will be totally fine. We're talking to adults about an adult conversation. I do think there is this resistance to put anything in writing, because then it feels like it's legally binding and we have to adhere to it. And it's like, no, you don't have to adhere to the plan if you've tried it and you know that it's not working. But what people want to see is that you are doing something and that you are talking about what you are doing. That's enough.
I mean, that's sage advice for lots of things in life, isn't it? Not just this. Which I think moves us into your second point about bracing ourselves for pay conversations. What would you love to tell people about this?
Yeah, so mainly that it's no longer a private conversation. And I think this is something that's been rumbling under the surface for quite a while. And I think it was very much accelerated by COVID and the way that we've all had to rapidly and drastically change the way that we work. And yes, I know that there's companies mandating people to go back to the office and all sorts, but we can't pretend that the way that we work now is completely the same as it was before. And so what we started to see was more and more conversations around how people work and the ways in which they wanted to work becoming much more to the forefront, and the issue around pay, how pay is decided, is it fair, what do your pay gaps look like, what's pay transparency, all those things, those conversations have really accelerated. So before, pay was always something that a couple would talk about. Whoever you lived within your family, you'd have those conversations in terms of, oh, I'm thinking of going for this job, it pays X. Do you think that's good? How can we manage it? You know, those types of conversations. They are still happening. But the line manager is now being brought into this conversation as well, because people are waking up to the fact that this is an adult conversation. And let's face it, we all work for money, but it's almost like this still dirty little secret, this taboo thing that we pretend that it's just for the good of whatever we're doing. And it's no, you can enjoy your job, but you can also be enjoy being paid well and paid fairly for it. And so what we're seeing now, and what we will see much more of with this pay gap reporting, and also against the backdrop of the EU bringing in pay transparency legislation across all EU member states, is that growing cultural expectation of fairness and transparency around how pay decisions are being made. And the first person that people go to are not necessarily going to be HR. It's going to be your line manager, unless you work within the HR department. And so what we're going to see is that line managers need to have not only that information, but the skill of being able to talk about pay and communicate effectively what the situation is. And if employees don't get that, they're going to start thinking that maybe there's something to hide, maybe there is a problem, and maybe this isn't the place that I should be in. And so it's really going to move from being a nice to have, oh, yeah, it'd be great to do some training around pay conversations, and we won't make it compulsory, we'll put it there for managers that want to be seen to be doing that. It's going to move from that to being, this is actually critical. And it's actually going to be part of our strategy when it comes to attraction and retention, because those questions, they will be coming up more and more, whether it's pre-interview, at interview, onboarding. Like I hear about employees openly asking, so how does pay work here? You know, how often do, you know, pay rises happen? What is the criteria? Can I see the pay ranges? Those questions are fast becoming the norm. And so line managers do need to be equipped with not only the knowledge of how pay actually works, but how to talk about it as well, which I think for a lot of organizations is going to be a problem, because we still see all those adverts, competitive salary, or ask a salary on request, and you think, oh, you might get a shock when people do actually start asking for this and they start walking because they're not happy with the responses that they get. And you know, that is definitely something that's coming. And I mentioned about the EU before. And so obviously for the UK, we are no longer part of the EU, but many organizations are part of, do trade globally and trade with Europe. And so there is a question that's going to be coming up of, well, how is this going to impact us? Especially if you're a company that has European offices. And I have spoken to employers who are trying to navigate, how do we manage this when there's lots of different jurisdictions, lots of different rules around transparency, and we have to be compliant? Do we want to have a company that has this block over here that has complete transparency, and then this block over here that has none? Because that causes problems and frictions. Another thing to think about is that if you're a company that's putting things out to tender, looking for funding, working with other companies, they might say, actually, as part of our pay gap work, our pay transparency commitments, we want to ensure that our supply chain does the same too. Yes, this doesn't impact us directly, but it doesn't mean that we're completely immune to it. So that, coupled with the fact that it's a much more expected conversation, means that employers in the middle need to be thinking about, well, where are we and how can we make improvements to make sure that we can still function as a business, that we are still relevant, that we can still attract the right people and retain the right people as well. And it's part of the reason why I've created a toolkit for managers around holding pay conversations. And it's based on scripts, scenarios, conversations that I've had with people that I know that they've had, and they've gone horribly wrong, and has had a detrimental impact on them as well. So that is something that I think isn't being talked about so much, but it's definitely coming on the horizon soon.
And I would absolutely back up that this is the stuff that people actually want help with. I don't want to do that really annoying pendulum swinging opinion thing, but I won't deliver it as a fact, but in my experience over the last 8 years of working with different employers, people like you and I get bought in usually to, I'm putting all the caveats here, aren't I, to help with the conversational side of things. to help with how do we implement this practically? How do we make sure that, okay, yes, we need to report, we need to do this, we need to do that. It's the stuff that comes after it. It's how we equip those line managers. The pressure is getting heavier and heavier on their shoulders. So how do we make sure that we look after them? Because we are entering an era where people don't want to be line managers. And I very strongly feel personally that is because we've done such a poor job of supporting them over the years that you look up and you think, who wants that hassle? You don't actually get to do your job or what you deem as your job. You're spending most of your time firefighting with individuals. It's not what you sign up for. And I'm not saying that we are aiming for peace and harmony and everybody sitting around singing Kumbaya, as my friend Chanel would say. But we do want workplaces that function and where people are able to feel like they can show up, add value, have their boundaries and feel like they are part of a team that wants them to succeed. And I don't think that's rose-tinted for us to want that in a workplace. No, I don't want to work as somewhere that it's part of a family because
No.
somebody posted something, a recruiter put a post up about that. And my comment was, why are you assuming that I want to work with my family? That's not a selling point for me.
That is not a selling point. That is a huge red flag. I see that as well. And I always say to my partner, do people know how dysfunctional families are?
Yes, it's wild that we use it as we're like a family around here. Not a good thing, pal. Maybe in your world. And I'm happy for you, pleased for you. Brilliant work on the great family. Have your flowers. But
Yeah, not for us.
not for me, that. Clearly, you haven't spoken to anybody in my family. Anyway, digress. And I've half forgot where I was going with that. But basically, the point I was trying to make was what we're sharing is. It's the stuff that matters. It's the side of things where people need help with conversations because you're not born knowing this stuff. You don't suddenly become a line manager and you're like, yeah, I can have these conversations, no bother at all. You do need to learn it. And I know, speaking from experience, that I was brought up around line managers who couldn't deal with it. So I didn't necessarily learn from other people what great looked like. I learned what not to do from some of them. And I did have some really great line managers in there as well, but it is about who you're surrounded by are the habits that you then pick up. So it is a bit about breaking cycles, I think, sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, like you say, if you provide line managers with the things that matter, it actually makes it easier for them to actually do their job. It might feel scary, but it's easier because I think we can all think back to line managers that we've had who've been subject matter experts, but they've just not had any of the people skills that they required to enable them to do the job well. And then there are specific stats, I can't remember them right now. But your working relationship and your work experience is heavily influenced by who your line manager is. We've all been in situations where you could work for the same company, but if you were to ask people what their experience is like, it will be coloured by who the line manager was. I've sat next to people working in the same organisation as me, doing similar work. They were having a terrible time looking at me with envy because I had a great line manager, but we were in the same workplace. These things are really important. And whilst on the face of it, you might think, oh, this is a subject we don't want to go into, or it's too difficult, they don't have time. Not doing this work is actually placing unnecessary burdens and stress on your line managers, which means they can't be as productive as you want them to be. They're unhappy in their role, and all of that has an impact on the business as well as their wider teams around them.
And because I could talk to you probably about most things all day, I'm going to take the opportunity to move us on to the third point here because there's a lot there. The third point here is that we need to be looking for consistency in pay conversations to minimize the loss of talent. Talk us through this one.
Yeah, so again, so we have organizations who probably have never had this conversation before and might be thinking, okay, we need to start talking about pay much more proactively. There is the temptation to think it just needs a statement. It just needs one blog, one conversation, and then we're done. But the reality is that you have to have a consistent approach to pay, a consistent approach to promotions and how career decisions are made, how pay decisions are made, etc. So what that means in practice is moving away from ad hoc conversations that come up as and when an issue arises or somebody raises something, ad hoc negotiation conversations, moving away from enabling line managers to just to make decisions around how much you're going to pay somebody when they're starting in the workplace. Like we know that happens. I was talking to the board of a company a few months ago, and we were talking about pay gap issues because they brought me in to help them. And one of the board members just said, "Oh, yes, I just make decisions on the spot. And if the person doesn't ask for as much as we have, I just go with it because it saves business money." And you could see everyone else just like putting their head in their hands, like, this is why we have the problems that we have. So it's about moving away from that ad hoc, inconsistent behavior when it comes to these issues. And moving to a system where everything is much more calibrated. So moving to a system where you have clear career, that is one of the biggest issues that I see employees have. They don't know how progression works. They don't know when and where jobs are being advertised. They don't know what the next pay jump looks like. They don't know how bonuses work. It's just a tap on the shoulder. You've got a bonus this year. It was this. Seems like somebody was tapped on the shoulder and they were put in a new role. And they're like, "What? We didn't even know it was advertising." You know, all of those types of things. That is one of the biggest issues that we see. And obviously that really impacts the pay gap because it's about the average of where people sit in organizations. So we need to move to systems where it's much, much clearer what progression looks like, whether that is upwards or sideways, temporary, permanent, whatever. And then also to really document pay decisions and that it needs to be focused on skills-based criteria rather than your proximity to a certain person or rather than a certain line manager or director taking a shine to you. Because we see that a lot in terms of relationships developing where they're taking somebody under their wing informally and they seem to be progressing magically, whereas everyone else doesn't get access to those things. Also, looking at who gets access to training. So, understanding what is the training that helps people to move upwards and who gets access to it, who doesn't, what does the demographic breakdown look like? So, that's a huge issue as well. It's really about documenting and being very intentional and purposeful around all decisions around pay and career progression and ensuring that there is that level of consistency. Because it's the inconsistency that causes the problems that you have that lead to people either stagnating in their jobs because they decide they can't afford to leave or it's too much hassle to leave, or it leads to people looking elsewhere. They're looking for that stability, that consistency, that transparency with your competitors. Yeah. And we know that all of this is important, especially for the current workforce. We have, what, 3 or 4 generations of the workforce, we know all at the same time. And we know that, especially for Gen Z, pay transparency is really important. So 68% of them said that they are looking for pay transparency within their current or new employers. And so this isn't just about having more bureaucracy, but it's about ensuring that you can protect your organization, you can protect the investments that you've made in people so that you can retain them. And that when you need to attract more people into the organization, you've got a narrative, you've got a story to tell that sets you apart. That, yeah, we are grown-ups here and we can have grown-up conversations about what career progression looks like for you, what pay progression looks like for you. And we're not afraid to hold those conversations. Yeah, so consistency to minimize that loss of talent and loss of productivity is going to be a key thing going forward for a lot of organizations.
It's a talent magnet, isn't it? And I think one of the things that I find organizations and sometimes individual line managers struggle to get their head around is, and I understand why, because it comes with a level of nervousness, is that difference between consistency doesn't have to equal everybody is going to be treated exactly the same. And there's a whole lot of nuance in that. And I'm not sure we as a human race have ever been brilliant at describing that either. That you can have the minimum viable product, you can have the foundational steps that absolutely have to have, that are the non-negotiables, that are the cornerstones, whatever you want to call them, That doesn't mean that everybody is going to suddenly be paid the same. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to be doing the same job. That doesn't mean, if I use some of my line of work examples, that doesn't mean that everybody's return experience is going to be the same, or that everybody's career 2 years in after having had a baby or going through the adoption process is going to have exactly the same career path that goes at the same trajectory or any of that stuff. That's not the consistent part. The consistent part is making sure that there is equal access for people to look at their development if they want to. In my world, it's a lot to do with choice and having options and not shutting stuff down based on unhelpful stereotypes. The same goes here, isn't it? I think that nobody's saying that everybody is going to be paid to the pound and pence or euro, that you're going to be paid exactly the same amount. And that's not what we're trying to get to, but to that consistent experience of, have you got the same access to a conversation with your line manager? Are you being given the same information about salary bands? Are you the person who is applying for a role in an organization? And when you ask or when you see that advert, all adverts have got the salary on rather than some are hidden, some we will share, some we won't, and let's explain that away. I think it's important for us to really be honest about what we mean when we say consistency.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it means being able to think outside the box in terms of what those solutions look like as well. And I see that a lot with organizations trying to address their pay gaps. And it's so funny for me to see what to me looks like a lot of copy and paste. There's so much of the same stuff in each plan. But the reality is that every plan should look different because, you know, why you have a pay gap or pay transparency issue is going to be different. Even if you had exactly the same data, your business model is different, the people that you have in your organization is different, the sectors are different. So why are the solutions always looking the same? Like I see everyone trying to implement the same thing in the hope that's going to make the difference, but it doesn't. Like you said, it has to be about the consistency in approach, and it has to be about asking the right questions and also understanding what is going on in your organization or in your team or in your department. And so one of the things that I have done is I have my own podcast and it's called Pay Gap Strategies for HR Leaders. And in one of the episodes, episode 13, is about fixing common pay gap mistakes and finding those better solutions. Because I think often we're not asking ourselves the right questions. We're fixating on, we think the solution is this, when actually there's a whole myriad of solutions over here that would suit you better. But it comes back to that same point that you were making of, it's not about making sure that everybody has exactly the same experience. No, it's about that consistency of approach in terms of what is your intention in terms of the experience that you want people to have. And then, like you say, the outcomes, the solutions could, and they should look different to what everyone else is doing because we're talking about something very unique here.
Oh, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I've written myself loads of notes in there, and I haven't even got to report on my pay gap. And I will also drop a link in the show notes to Michelle's podcast. I've listened to a few of the episodes and they are brilliant and so interesting. Whether you are reporting on pay gaps or not, I think it's because I'm definitely not, but I take so much away from your episodes. So thank you so much for reminding us of that. Where else, if people are listening to this and they think, yes, we need some Michelle in our lives, where is the best place for them to come and find out more about what you do?
LinkedIn, under my name, Michelle Jimmer. I'm quite active on there, so you can always send me a DM. Obviously, you can listen to the podcast. I talk about all sorts of things, pay gaps related. Or if you want to drop me an email, maybe we can put to my email address in the show notes. And yeah, happy to have a conversation with anybody who's thinking about this, struggling, needs a sense check, all of the things.
All of those contact details will be in the show notes. So just head there if you want to make contact. Thank you so much, Michelle. You have also just reminded me you've not been coming up in my LinkedIn feed a lot recently. So I'm going to go find you and I'm going to go and interact with some of your posts so that the algorithm knows that I want to see you. That wonderful algorithm. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure as always, and take care.
You so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. If you have got a few spare minutes, who am I kidding? Of course you haven't got a few spare minutes, but if you would like to choose to spend a few of your minutes giving me any sort of review or rating, I would massively appreciate it. It does help other people find it, and it also lets me know that I'm hitting the spot with listeners. For more free resources, you can head to the show notes, where you'll find a link to the Power of the Parent website, or do head on over to LinkedIn and give me a follow. Search Charlotte Speak and my grinning face should pop up. Until next time, take care.